Good morning. This is Jan Kane, and I'll be reading to you from the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, December 5th. We'll start our reading with an article from Urbana Schools. The headline is "Put on Paid Leave. Assistant Superintendent Also Out Effective Immediately" is the subtitle, and the byline is Lindsay Jones. Preston Williams once again is in charge of Urbana Schools after a Tuesday evening school board vote placed Superintendent Don Owen on paid administrative leave effective immediately. The board offered no comment during the meeting as to why Owen had been placed on leave, nor did it say anything about its decision to put Assistant Superintendent Kathy Barber on immediate leave as well. However, in a statement released following the meeting, the board said, "There is never a good time to change administrators." However, once the BOE reached a consensus to not renew Dr. Owen's contract and informed him of the same, the board believed it would benefit from bringing in temporary administration. The other assistant superintendent, Samuel Bindum, had been placed on leave prior to Tuesday's meeting. He's been charged with felony eavesdropping for allegedly attempting to record a closed October 28th board meeting at which his and Owen's employment were to be discussed. The board statement also said, "Please understand that the board's actions tonight are not a discharge from employment of either Dr. Owen or Ms. Barber. Both Dr. Owen and Ms. Barber have tenure rights in their employment with Urbana School District, allowing them to remain employed as certified employees of the district in some capacity. However, their tenure rights do not allow them to remain employed as administrators beyond this school term." After the meeting, Owen released a statement through Langaker Law, an Urbana-based law firm, expressing his dismay at the board's decision and maintaining his earlier contention that he was caught off guard when he heard of the board's decision. The rapid change caught many off guard, including Dr. Owen himself, who first learned of the proposed Urbana administration changes from social media after the district's statement was shared by the local news media, the release stated. However, the board's statement noted that Owen was told in an executive session after the regular November 20th meeting that there was not a consensus to renew his contract, and he retained legal representation after Thanksgiving. In his statement, Owen's earlier claims that he had served with honesty, integrity, fiscal responsibility, and compassion were underscored, and he noted the board had not directly listed what alleged wrongdoings were responsible for his ouster. Prior to the November 30th announcement, Dr. Owen had worked closely with the board and enjoyed an amiable relationship with many of its members, the release said. In October, the board evaluated Dr. Owen and determined that he was fully meeting the board's expectations. There has been no allegation of wrongdoing leveled against Dr. Owen, further serving to highlight the unusual nature of the board's actions. Prior to the vote, public comments ranged from support for Owen and the shift toward the restorative practices disciplinary technique he had overseen implementation of at Urbana Middle and High School, to support for the board making changes to its administrative staff. Some speakers, including Linda Miner, said they hoped for more transparency from the board regarding the changes, as a formal explanation for what was going on had not been given prior to the board's votes. One wasn't given after, either. "If our administration has not been acting with integrity, ethics, and value, I fully support the change in administration," Miner said, adding that she wasn't sure the whole story had been revealed yet. Our next article is titled "No Deal Likely in Tax Suit, Trial Expected to Last Entire Month of January." The byline is Deborah Pressey. Lawyers for the Carl Foundation and the government bodies they're facing in a lengthy lawsuit said Tuesday a settlement is unlikely before the lawsuit goes to trial January 2nd. Judge Randy Rosenbaum gently encouraged both sides to consider settling at what was a final pre-trial hearing before the actual trial begins. One of Carl's lawyers, Stephen Flom, said the city of Urbana isn't interested in talking settlement, and it would be difficult for Champaign County and its officials to settle with Carl without Urbana and Cunningham Township being willing to do the same, said Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher, though he also added, I'm not saying never. Flom said Carl has made numerous overtures over the years to settle with the remaining defendants in the lawsuit, which currently include Champaign County and several county officials, Urbana, Cunningham Township, and the Illinois Department of Revenue. The Urbana School and Park Districts signed a settlement agreement with Carl in 2013 that's required them to make refunds to Carl through this year on some of the property taxes Carl previously paid them. More recently, the settlement topic has been a non-starter because the city of Urbana has refused to discuss it, Flom said. They prefer to roll the dice, he said. In its 10-year-old lawsuit, Carl is seeking refunds from local taxing districts on the property taxes it paid on four properties, among them Carl Foundation Hospital, from 2004 to 2011. Carl paid $20.7 million in taxes on those properties for the years it's contesting its taxable status. Meanwhile, former Urbana Mayor Laurel Prussing, who has long been one of the most strenuous and vocal objectors to property tax exemptions for Carl, is newly involved as one of the defendants in this lawsuit as the new county treasurer. The trial is expected to take up all of January, with the first day reserved for opening statements from all the lawyers. Carl plans to call 16 witnesses, including current and former Carl executives. Dr. James Leonard, CEO of the Carl Foundation, will be the first witness called, according to Flom. The county, state, Urbana, and Cunningham Township will call about 14 witnesses. Next, we have a story titled, Metal Detectors May Become Fixtures. The byline is Julie Worth. State Farm Center is considering the use of walk-through metal detectors to improve security at arena events, Director Kevin Ullestad said this week. In an interview for News Gazette Media's Campus Conversation podcast, Ullestad said officials are discussing that and other proposals as part of an ongoing security review. The metal detectors would be permanent and used for all concerts, shows, and athletic events, he said. We like that idea, and it's not new, he said, adding that they're already common in Chicago, Indianapolis, and St. Louis. Obviously, security and safety of our guests and our patrons is our number one priority, without a doubt, Ullestad said. Currently, State Farm Center staff use handheld metal detectors at some shows with a more active crowd, such as a rock or hip-hop concert, he said. We're not using wands on every show, he said. Ullestad said handheld metal detectors were used quite heavily at the arena after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, along with bag searches and other security measures. But over the years, their use had fallen off, he said. The Manchester Arena bombing in 2017 in England, where 23 people were killed, ratcheted it up again, he said. The industry changes, but it's evolved to the point where we've got to be very safety-focused for everything. That's not a bad thing, he said. State Farm Center searches patrons' bags at every event, and the university launched a new policy this year allowing only clear bags inside the arena and Memorial Stadium. Each guest can carry one large clear plastic or vinyl bag, no larger than 12 inches by 6 inches by 12 inches. A small clutch, 4 by 7 inches, a diaper bag, or a bag approved for medical needs are also permitted after a search by security personnel. All other bags, totes, and coolers are prohibited. Coats and jackets may also be searched. Next, we have a story from the Champaign City Council. It's titled, Cannabis Fines Drop, But More Is in Store. Alcohol Tobacco Fines to Get Review. The byline is Adalberto Toledo. At Tuesday night's Champaign City Council meeting, officials unanimously approved lowering the fine for possession of cannabis to $50. But they also made it clear that that action was just the start of something bigger. They said they plan to launch an extended discussion next year aimed at resolving possible logical inconsistencies that Tuesday's action created in the city's fine structure. Councilmember Clarissa Foreman, who initially called for the study session, which resulted in lowering the penalty for cannabis possession from $350, is among those wanting to re-examine fines in place for other violations, including those pertaining to alcohol and tobacco. Fellow Councilmember Greg Stock is also on board with that effort. Before voting to reduce the marijuana fine to $50, Stock questioned the lack of an age restriction in the revised ordinance, noting that the fine for a 16-year-old caught with tobacco would now be more than for one caught with cannabis. "I'll vote for it because I overall believe it's the right thing to do," Stock said, "but I would like to see parity in our fine table, and whether that means changing this or putting an age limit in, then so be it. It seems ridiculous to me that one of these very similar products is fined four times more than the other." Councilmember Tom Bruno countered Stock's comments, saying, "There's a good argument for having stiff fines for the possession of tobacco by young people," and mentioned that though the use of cannabis may be problematic, the effects of tobacco are worse. "Cannabis is not as addictive as tobacco," Bruno said. "When we look the other way as a society and allow a kid to openly smoke tobacco, we condemn them to a lifelong addiction that will cost society and them personally. It's not a victimless crime, and if we can deter that with a stiff fine, then it's good." Councilmember Alicia Beck said that, ultimately, questions about punitive actions by the city on controlled substances turn to moral judgments. "Morality is something that's hard to legislate, and we really shouldn't," Beck said. "I think this is responsive to the community's request, and I think we're addressing the most critical issues. We need to look at other fines in the future so we know we're not imposing fines on people that are going to not let them continue with their lives." In other business, the council approved an ordinance Tuesday to go into an agreement with the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority and local agencies to purchase ballistics equipment. However, the fact that city staff did not address the future expense of replacement equipment concerned some on the council. City Manager Dorothy David said that, given police needs in light of increased gun violence in the community, the city needs to, quote, take a leap of faith with the equipment and hope that the city secures funding to replace it when it reaches the end of its lifespan. "This becomes our perennial challenge," David said. "Whenever we have the opportunity to purchase things with grant money, we think about the fact that in the absence of grant funds, we can't make the purchase of new equipment, and we usually don't have the recurring funding necessary to renew. But this is a rare instance. We would be taking a leap of faith and begin the discussion around the question of sharing the cost for new equipment in the future." Our next article is entitled, "Caught with Ammo Drugs, Man Given Probation." The byline is Mary Schenck. A Champaign man who admitted fleeing from police while possessing ammunition on one occasion and having ecstasy on another has been sentenced to first offender probation. William Z. Laws, age 19, whose last known address was in the 600 block of East Bradley Avenue, pleaded guilty in two different criminal cases Tuesday before Judge Roger Weber and had a third case dismissed. Laws pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor counts for a sentence of 17 days in the county jail. One alleged that on July 25th, he fled from a Champaign police officer who tried to stop him for a traffic violation. The other accused him of having 77 rounds of .22 caliber firearm ammunition in the car with him. In the other case, Laws pleaded guilty to felony possession of a controlled substance, admitting he had less than a gram of ecstasy in his possession when Champaign police stopped him August 25th for an alleged traffic violation. He was sentenced to 2 years of first offense probation for the felony. He will also have to pay at least $520 in fines and fees and perform 30 hours of public service. Should he successfully complete the terms of his probation, he will not have a conviction for the felony. Assistant State's Attorney Lindsey Clark, who worked out Law's negotiated plea agreement with Champaign attorney Jamie Props, also agreed to dismiss a case in which Laws was charged with aggravated unlawful use of weapons in connection with an October 9th incident where shots were fired outside the Oakwood Trace Apartments on North 3rd Street. Clark said the evidence in that case pointed more toward co-defendant James Borden, age 30, of Champaign, who is charged with being an armed habitual criminal. His case is unresolved. Our next article is also from Mary Schenck and is titled, Police Catch Suspect in April 19th Home Burglary. A Champaign man accused of breaking into a home in Urbana this past spring is due back in court later this month. Quentin Larry, age 26, who listed an address in the 1500 block of Hedge Road, was arraigned Tuesday on a single count of residential burglary. First Assistant State's Attorney Steve Ziegler said the break-in occurred April 19th in the 1200 block of West Church Street. The Urbana resident came home to discover a television, an electronic gaming system, a pistol, and cash missing from the home. Police discovered that the house had likely been entered through a bedroom window. Latent prints lifted from the sill matched Larry, according to Ziegler. Judge John Kennedy issued a warrant for Larry's arrest in early October after those fingerprint results came back from the state crime lab. He was arrested Monday. He told the judge he wanted to have a probable cause hearing. Kennedy set that for December 18th. Ziegler said Larry has pending charges of driving under suspension and possession with intent to deliver cannabis. He has a prior conviction for domestic battery. Next, we have the Teacher of the Week. Meet Natasha Capel, a science teacher at two-year-old non-traditional Academy High. The native Canadian believes her current work reflects what she was born to do. I feel like I have such a strong purpose in life, to help teenagers become who they want to be, she says. I feel like I've always had to prove myself. I don't want the kids in my classroom to feel that way. The first in her family to attend college, Capel has since collected multiple master's degrees and held various positions before landing at Champaign's Independent High School, which she believes is the perfect fit for her anti-lecture teaching style. Here's more. What's unique about Academy High is it doesn't feel like a school. It's a lot more laid back, and I feel like the kids are less stressed. Almost all of my classes, to the best of my ability, are thematic or project-based. I like to be a facilitator. I don't want to feel like I'm a teacher in the room. I'm never in front of the room lecturing. That's not my thing. I found out I love to teach when I had 3 years in a research lab here where I studied limb regeneration. During that time, I TA'd a lot, and I thought, I really like teaching. What I didn't like was that by the time they went to college, they had already decided what they want to do. So I decided to go back and get my teaching certification. I like teenagers. I think they're funny. I think they're weird. I appreciate that they're going through this crazy time in life. I feel that teachers just have such an important role. I feel like I have to support people as they figure out who they are and help them become good people. The most important thing my students can learn from me is all life is science. You have to be scientifically literate. Science isn't like you take a class and it's over. Science is life. It's everywhere and it's really important. When I'm not in the classroom, I box at CU Women's Boxing. I used to run. I ran for years, doing half marathons and some other races, but I didn't feel like a runner. The first day I put on boxing gloves, I was like, oh my gosh, I like to hit stuff, and I'm a boxer. I have an 8-year-old daughter, and I take my job very seriously as being a good, strong role model because she is a young girl. You may submit your nominations for Teacher of the Week. On Wednesdays, the News Gazette spotlights an area educator who is making a difference. To nominate, email lindsayjones@ljones@newsgazette.com or tweet her @lindsayjones. Jim Day's column is entitled, When It Comes to State Finances, Read the Fine Print. When it comes to reviewing the state of Illinois' finances, be skeptical of what politicians have to say. They, no matter their party or political perspective, have a motive to shade or exaggerate the truth. Those who want the straight dope need to listen to the money men, guys like Eric Kim from Fitch Ratings Service. So, Eric, what is the financial state of the state? We have a BBB, two notches above a junk bond rating, with a negative outlook, said Kim, who earlier this week released a lengthy reexamination of the state's finances. Gee, that doesn't sound encouraging. How does that compare to the other 40-plus states that Fitch reviews? In terms of ratings, Illinois is the lowest-rated U.S. state, Kim said. Yes, nobody knows what troubles the land of Lincoln has seen, is seeing, because no other state has over the past 15 to 20 years, presided over a financial clown show comparable to that of Illinois. But hope springs eternal for positive change. Democratic Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker is waiting in the wings. The multi-billionaire heir to a family fortune is positively drooling to put his policy stamp on this state. At the same time, the state has an overwhelmingly Democratic House and Senate, whose members are drooling as sloppily as Pritzker in anticipation of getting to work. That's good, the Fitch report states, in the sense that the political gridlock that marked the relationship between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan will be a thing of the past. This will make it unlikely the state will repeat its more than two-year stretch without an enacted budget between July 2015 and July 2017, the report states. At the same time, agreement between Pritzker and the Democratic legislature is no guarantee they will adopt policies that will lift Illinois out of its effective bankruptcy. Between 2003 and 2014, the state operated under single-party control. Over that span, the state's credit quality deteriorated considerably, the Fitch report states. Obviously, what matters is the quality of financial decision-making going forward. Will the governor and legislature make the same mistakes in the future, spending far more than the state takes in, ignoring monstrous pension problems as they have in the past? Or are they ready to step up to the plate and get serious? Kim said Illinois' revenue, spending, and long-term liabilities are manageable, but they have to be properly managed. Or, in his words, the state's operating performance must be sound. That is where Illinois' credit quality suffers most, he said. Referring to the two-year budget standoff between Rauner and Madigan, Kim described it as the epitome of not making fiscal decisions that dearly cost the state. That's why if the economy goes south, the report states, Illinois remains poorly positioned to address the negative fallout. Why? Because it has no rainy day fund. Instead, it has debts in the form of budget deficits, $130 billion pension debts, and $6.6 billion in unpaid bills owed to nearly 74,000 entities. Absent robust and sustained budgetary improvement and a commitment to addressing the backlog, Illinois will maintain an accounts payable balance into the foreseeable future, the report states. Fitch reports that Illinois has a strong economic base, particularly in Chicago, but that its overall economy has grown only tepidly since the end of the Great Recession. Demographic trends imply future growth may also remain subdued. The state's population has been essentially flat since 2010, while the nation has increased more than 5%, the report states. Pritzker has talked only generally about reducing the size and cost of state government, but he has boldly called for a state income tax increase through a progressive income tax amendment to the Illinois Constitution. He also has embraced plans for aggressive spending on social service programs as well as infrastructure improvements. Firm policy plans have yet to be articulated, Fitch states. One potential proposal, backed by the Center on Tax and Budget Accountability, calls for issuing pension obligation bonds to pay for stepped-up payments to the state's underfunded pensions. That's an example of the operating performance issue that Kim cited. He's less than impressed by borrowing to raise money needed to pay debts. Fitch has previously noted that issuance of POBs is generally neutral to negative for an issuer's credit quality. if POB proceeds are deposited with a pension trust, while actuarial contributions continue to flow uninterrupted from annual budgetary resources, the issuance of POBs offsets unfunded liability and has little immediate impact on the issuer's long-term liability burden, the report states. On the other hand, using bond proceeds for budget relief by offsetting an annual pension contribution is deficit financing that may negatively weigh on the credit ratings. This is green eyeshade stuff, understood mostly by people who have a handle on public finance. But it's not so complicated that regular people can't get the basics. If Illinois is to avoid falling deeper into the financial gutter, the junk bond status once reached under Rauner, it has to get its house in order. That means balancing budgets, limiting spending increases, paying debts, and enhancing revenues through solid economic growth and/or tax increases. Kim's Fitch report thoroughly outlined the problem and the possibilities in its exhausting report. As to suggestions on how to proceed, Kim had no comment. "Well, that's a policy. We don't do policy," he said. Let's turn to High School Confidential. On Wednesdays throughout the school year, area students fill us in on what's happening at their high schools. From Champaign Central, the art club's creations are visible in the hallway overlooking the courtyard. The club, which meets Thursdays, provides a creative outlet for young artists. From DeLand Weldon, the boys' basketball team played its first home game of the season on Friday, falling short to First Baptist Christian School. From Fisher, the high school has introduced an app, downloadable on Android and iPhones, that offers everything from Fisher history to a live news feed. From Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, the pep band's first performance was at Thursday's girls' basketball game, playing fan favorites like Shut Up and Dance, Office Theme, and Immigrant Song. Said junior saxophonist Spencer Hazen, "I'm really excited to play Enter Sandman. It's my favorite. I can't wait for pep band this year. It's super fun to play pep music." From Judah Christian, drama auditions were held for the upcoming production of Aladdin. "I'm very excited for this play because it will be very energetic and fun," student Isaac Brown said. From Monticello, Art Club continued its holiday tradition of helping paint windows around school. From Muhammad Seymour, student council members visited for a Hawaiian-themed district event. After games, students listened to a lesson about leadership. The event finished with a lip-sync battle where Muhammad performed "Gotta Go My Own Way" from High School Musical. Paxton Buckley Loda. Last week, the school's GIVE and National Honor Society clubs put out donation boxes for the Day of Giving to help feed hungry families in the area. From Urbana, the advanced child development class hosted mini therapy horses from Heartland Mini Hoofs in Taylorville. Students in the class plan activities for the tiny tiger preschoolers aged 2 to 5 who come to school twice a week. From Uni High, sophomore Iffy Alana has received permission to pursue the establishment of a uni cheerleading team starting with boys' basketball season. Uni does not currently have cheer teams nor a proper mascot. From Unity, the cross-country team's banquet celebrated another successful season. The senior class helped bring home 4 trophies in 4 years. And from Shiloh, on Sunday, National Honor Society members volunteered their time to ring bells for the Salvation Army at Paris's Rural King. This concludes our first half hour of reading from the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, dated Wednesday, December 5th. I'll be back in just a moment.